Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Welcome in. It is time once again for our San Diego Roundtable Pizza, 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. And we're playing the Eliminator because we've lost a chair and a person today. We're down to five. It's a long season. You know what? It's a grind. Sometimes guys got to go in the IO. And this week, we've got Steven Woods at the end.
I didn't know these were optional. I had no idea.
Paul Reindel is sitting next to him. Hello, Paulie.
They're actually not.
Braden Soprenant, who's been out of the country for the last couple of weeks, returns. Hello, Braden.
Hello. Back from the IL.
And Chris Ello, always our most consistent. He is always here.
Don't count on that.
And Woods, you've always been here, too.
Pretty much.
I've missed more than you have.
Yeah.
You've missed one, too?
I missed one.
All right, let's get this out of the way quickly, because I don't want to spend a ton of time on just yesterday's game in particular. Was it okay that Manny swung 3-0 yesterday with the bases loaded? Woods?
Great idea. Not his pitch.
Paulie, okay that Manny swung 3-0?
Yes.
Braden, okay that Manny swung 3-0?
I don't really think so, but no.
All right, Chris, okay that Manny swung 3-0?
Who else has been driving in runs?
That's what I think, too. It was a pitch to hit. He's the
but
guy.
But Woodsy's right. He didn't get the right strike.
Not the one he wanted.
No, if he had it to do again, he'd wait for a little better strike.
If he like popped out to left or something, do you feel a little bit better about it? Is it because it was a ground ball in the hole?
No, if he hit a screamer to the right fielder on that pitch away, I'm like, all right,
he chose the wrong pitch.
But to be his perfect.
Braden, is that a walk isn't a bad result for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
They still have the lead.
I don't think that they would have minded
him. They got a lefty-lefty matchup coming up. Manny's got to find a pitch to hit and do some damage. He's the one guy who can. Yeah. Which pitch coming out of 3-0, 3-1, or 3-2 is he going to get the best pitch to hit? Probably 3-0. So I like
if
that he's looking
if
to
your
swing.
Offense has to rely on one individual.
That's a major problem.
Well, the reality is you're not supposed to be winning that game anyway.
We have 57 more minutes to try to figure out how to change
I'm just saying in general, if your entire offense just relies on one person, then that person swinging out of his shoes on a 3-0 pitch that might not be his pitch is going to be catastrophically
bad. It's relying on one person right now,
yes,
because nobody else is doing the job.
It's quite surprising to me that they are honestly still where they are.
It's amazing.
I know. Some of the things that are going on
I know.
With this lineup and offense, and then you have three pitchers out,
yeah,
and Jason Adams struck a little, you know. It really is quite remarkable.
It is.
They're winning as many as they
do. The only thing I'm saying about this is at the beginning of the year, their whole kind of pass the baton offense was great because it was working. But if at some point it doesn't start to work, you can't panic and then go away from what your offensive philosophy is. So from that perspective, swinging 3-0 when you got a guy up, you got to trust the guy behind you. And if you don't trust the guy behind you, you're not going to be good offensively in baseball.
All right, let's close the door on yesterday's game in particular and look at more broader picture issues for the San Diego Padres over this next hour. And you know, yesterday the series loss to the Dodgers was their first loss series in 3 weeks. You have to go all the way back to getting swept by the Blue Jays the last time the Padres actually lost a series. So things aren't exactly dire at the moment. And we don't want to move the goalposts either, because 13 days ago, they started a stretch of 26 games in 27 days. And I believe we all said, hey, you got to tread water. You got to find a way not to lose a bunch of ground. They've gone 7-6 through those first 13 games of this stretch, with another 13 games coming. So, Woods, what is your evaluation of how the team has started this really brutal stretch of schedule here in June?
Well, I think you just said it, man. Moving the goalposts. You can't do it. You had some really winnable games in there that you lost. You had some very losable games in there that you won. 7-6. When you put it like that, you know, no problem. It's exactly what we said they needed to do. They're doing it. Again, as Chris just pointed out, I'm sure we'll talk about more. Smoke, mirrors, whatever you want to call it, luck, whatever. Also, there's a lot of skill and a lot of heart and a lot of grit involved in winning seven out of 13 games when all those things are going so poorly.
Chris, how have the Padres handled these first 13 games of this stretch?
They've taken advantage of the fortune that they have produced for themselves. I don't know that that made any sense, but other than the, you know, the game the Dodgers, you know, cashed in halfway through the game, hadn't it been 10 consecutive wins by one or two runs? It's finding a way. This is actually what good teams do. It just seems really difficult for us to look at it right now because you'd like to see them blowing everybody out and, you know, winning a little more comfortably and everybody hitting. This is what you have to do to survive a season, so I actually don't feel that bad about it.
Paulie, do Giants fans complain that they've won seven in a row, but six of them were by one run, and two of them had to be comebacks against the Rockies?
Yes, I mean, they do, actually, if you want to know the truth. Just so you know, they
Bob
actually,
Melvin's on the hot seat.
They absolutely are complaining online, just so you know.
I mean, they're similar to how I felt watching Padres baseball for the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, where it's like, hey, they're getting mostly good results, and they're in just about every single game. But it's like shedding years off my life watching them.
Yeah.
Like, I would imagine it's probably similar with Giants.
Brayden, I know we live in a global world, so I imagine you were able to keep tabs. Maybe even watch a lot of the games. But getting away maybe gives you kind of a fresh perspective. As you come back, do you see the same team, a different team than the one that you saw when you left a couple of weeks ago?
The funniest thing was I got to watch a couple of the day games start at like 10 o'clock at night, which is kind of like
I was just going to ask, when do you get to watch the game?
So a couple of those I got to watch a little bit when I got home. I mean, a lot of the games were played at like 2 or 3 in the morning, which I wasn't being able to watch. But the funniest part was waking up the next day to 300 text messages every day. And watching my buddies live react to the game.
It's crazy.
And when you look at it outside, it's so, because, you know, usually when the game's going on, I'm with them, emotionally living and dying with every pitch.
Sure.
I look at the whole text thread, it's like, this guy's a tired act, he sucks, we got to get rid of this guy. And then later he wins the game for the team or whatever, and it's just like, you guys are hilarious watching the live reaction, but that's the emotional aspect of the fan. In terms of, like, watching this team, I mean, they're kind of like the same team. I mean, we said it before at the beginning of the year. When some asset of the team, you know, is not, you know, quote, pulling their weight, another facet of the team does a good job taking over. I think the bullpen did a great job with that over 2 weeks that I was gone, and Manny Machado basically single-handedly carrying the team for those 2 weeks. But Chris said it, you know, this is like the one-run games. It's like 2023. They were losing all of those games, and now they're winning some of them. So good teams find a way to win. When you look at this stretch, this is one of two very difficult stretches in terms of opponents. If you go through it about 500, you're in a good spot. You're just trying to tread water through the season.
Legit could have been 1-12.
Yes.
Well, you know, we had the blowout. But legitimately 1-12.
Do we all do that? I guess I just kind of had that revelation because whenever a Padres game is played, usually Paulie, Woods, me, maybe Adam are on a thread where we're constantly commenting through the game.
This guy sucks.
Brayden obviously has one with his friends. Chris, do you ever text anyone during Padres games, or are you just kind of watching yourself?
How do
yourself?
You do that?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't. Well, here's why. And Scraby would back
all?
This up. I watch them all on DVR later that night.
Can't
so
do
I
it.
Cannot live text, because I don't watch live very often.
You should actually start texting Ben late at night when you're
DVR. As it's coming down.
Just
every Ben, did you just see that play in the third inning?
Up. That's fine.
The funniest thing about that was, like, what I would read in the, I would literally go up, it would be like play-by-play in the text, and I'd be like, oh my God, we must got our ass kicked.
Yeah.
And I look at the score, we lost by one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just
or
came
one
up
by
short,
one.
Or one
the
by
hell
one.
Hell is Tyler Wade doing on this team? And then
yeah, base
clear
triple.
Exactly. That's how it was every time. It was hilarious.
I know one of the busiest text threads this week involved the game that the Dodgers, punted away. Dave Roberts just letting Matt Sauer wear it for 111 pitches and then using Kike Hernandez for 2 1/3 innings. We talked a lot on our show about how kind of making a mockery of the game, and if the baseball gods truly existed, they would not have let the Dodgers win the last game of the series. But, Chris, I mean, do the ends justify the means? The Dodgers got what they wanted, a series victory with a bullpen day in two close games. Does that make it okay what Dave Roberts did to his own team in the middle game of the series?
Couple things. First of all, the fact that they were thinking ahead like that makes me feel like they thought this series was important. Maybe they ought to tell their catcher about that, Will Smith, who doesn't these games mean anything.
Yeah.
Secondly, yeah, what they did was fine under the current rules of the game. And baseball already kind of recognizes the mockery that is being made. And they put the rule in, I think, just last year that you at least have to be behind by 8 runs now.
Yep.
Before you bring us, they're going to have to change it again and make it be at least the 8th inning. I think bringing a field, you know, a position player in the 6th inning is overdoing the mockery situation. Yes. So I think baseball will see that and change it.
Like, why does only one team get to save their arms? Like, we still had to throw pitchers out there in that blowout game. Why couldn't we just throw Tyler Wade out there and against Kike Hernandez on the mound and just try to race to the finish line? You know what I mean? We still had to put our guys in there.
No. Well, you can see now, after yesterday's performance, why Dave Roberts did not want to throw Michael Kopech. That actually would have been a perfect lane for Michael Kopech coming back off an injury. He was saving Michael Kopech for a bigger game the next day. Michael Kopech was terrible. We let him off the hook.
Circus.
He was horrible. Horrible. And what better time to pitch Michael Kopech than in that game to get him, let him get loose, get some, you know, get some work. But Dave Roberts, he got cute, and it worked out for him. He gets cute a lot, and it works out for him a lot.
Brandon, you know why it works out for him? He's got the best players.
He's got all the
best
those
players. Guys tend to make managers look smart.
Correct. Right. You know. Teoscar finding it and Conforto finding it. You know, it's tough.
You're a really good coach when you got really good players.
Brandon, I think one of the hardest things for us to reconcile as fans is that we all believe that the best path to success is to try your hardest for all 162 games every moment, when the reality is that conserving and strategizing and picking your spots may be a better path to success than simply going all out all of the time.
And that's and it's hard for us to say that on the radio sometimes, because fans go, like, you know, they want to win every single game. But, like, the reality is these players and these organizations understand they're not going to win every single game, and they know that you're not going to be able to make it 162-0, and there's a lot of games in there where you're not feeling right, and it's just, it's kind of a punt, let's get them tomorrow. That's kind of the baseball philosophy. From the standpoint of, like, winning and losing, you know, what Dave Roberts did, you know, makes a lot of strategic sense. Or I'm kind of upset about it is from the, you know, the entertainment side of Major League Baseball. I mean, I was at the game. I thought that was the most. I thought the last four innings was a joke to Major League Baseball.
Yeah. I'm surprised that Did you stay?
My brother had my parent season tickets. I went with a friend. He was my ride. He wanted to enjoy the game. He doesn't get to go to games very often because he's working a lot. And he had an opportunity to go to a game, and the last four innings were a game was basically the Poway Sportsplex watching guys, like, grown men play play underhand softball. Yeah. And
don't kid yourself, those pitches can be tough to hit. I am proof of that.
but I think it sets I think you're getting into, if this trend continues, and again, strategically, I think it's obviously smart for the Dodgers in that sense, but if more teams continue to do this, are you going to get a sense of load management in Major League Baseball like you get in the NBA? Like, why do people love sports? They love watching the best athletes in the world compete at the highest level. That's why All-Star games are a joke, because they're not competing at a high level. So I think it sets a bad precedent for Major League Baseball from the entertainment standpoint. But if we're talking about just trying to win games, winning and losing, I have no problem with Dave Roberts doing that. From a perspective of protecting the game and honoring the game, I think it was kind of Bush League what they did on Tuesday.
You're listening to our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It is presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty.
Did you strike out last night or something?
No, I was 3-for-3 last night. Good. That's why I brought it up.
There you go.
I hit good last night.
I think most of us remember the 2010s. They were not particularly kind to the San Diego Padres.
Those were not the
aughts. No, the aughts were good. But,
yeah, the aughts,
know,
and then the...
From, 2000...
Let's say 11. 2010 was kind of
fun. To 2018, 2019. Pretty rough decade for the San Diego Padres. And when you went to Petco Park during that decade, well, it didn't matter who they were facing. The Cubs, the Giants.
The Mets.
They were always... Tons of fans from every opposing team came to Petco Park, and usually, at least if not outnumbered Padres fans, it came close. And when the Dodgers came, it wasn't close. There were more Dodgers fans than Padres fans. That changed. What did we say in the 2010s? Well, put a winning team on the field, and it will change. And it absolutely did. And now Petco Park is packed every single night with San Diego Padres fans. 29 sellouts in 33 games so far this year. But yesterday in particular, was probably one of the most heavily attended visiting crowd games we have seen since those 2010s. I want to ask the panel, do you have a problem with that? Is there anything else the Padres should be doing? Is there anything that Padres fans should be encouraged to do to not let that happen when Dodger fans want to try to invade their ballpark? Brayden?
Well, I think this is a, you know, this is a situation where, and you know, we like to say some fan bases are better than others and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, most, you know, a lot of fan bases are very much bandwagoner fan bases. And what winning a World Series has done for the Dodger fans is it has emboldened them even more than they already were. Let's take a look at 2023 when the Padres were playing the Dodgers throughout the season. Those crowds were a lot more Padres-centric because what happened in the end of 2022? The Padres knocked the Dodgers out of the playoffs. All of a sudden, the big bad Dodger fans didn't want to deal with Padres fans talking smack to them at the ballpark on the road, and therefore they weren't as inclined to go to games. When you see opposing teams' fans on the road, most of the time it's for teams that are very good where they know that their team is going to win. If you're a Padres fan, and we're seeing a lot more Padres fans on the road, I am more inclined to go to games knowing that the Padres are going to win. I went to a couple games on the road during those 2010s in which, you know, I went to a couple Rangers-Padres games, and the Rangers weren't very good either, but just the relentless smack talk that you would get from the opposing fans were utterly ridiculous. And I don't think a lot of people really want to enjoy that. So for me, if you want Dodger fans to stop showing up, you have to continually beat them on a continuous basis in order for that to potentially happen, especially at the height that they currently are at. I don't want to blame Padres fans for selling tickets. I don't want any of that stuff. Sometimes when your team is really, really good, the fans are going to come and support said team.
I think there's a valid point there, Woods. As long as the Dodgers are good, and they have been for a while, they always are going to have more fans, probably than other than the Yankees, any other team in baseball. Los Angeles is huge. I mean, they're never going to stop having the most fans on the West Coast, no matter how good the Padres are. Could win three straight World Series. The Dodgers are going to have more fans than Padres fans. Is it simply a numbers game? I mean, they can't get into their own ballpark sometimes. They like our ballpark better than theirs. So they're always going to come down here, and there's not much we can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, I learned my lesson a few years ago. You know, you got five guys up here, five media passes. We can go to any game, yes, we want. We can go sit on Manny Machado's lap if we want in the clubhouse before the game. It's frowned upon, but not illegal, I found out. So
don't eat the snacks down there either.
Yeah, don't touch any of it. Bro, don't help yourself to water. All right, just stand there. I was there yesterday. It was a day game. It was super rowdy. So it was chill, you know. I also had really good seats down close, and but there was a section I walked by and I went, "Oh my god, imagine being smack dab in the middle of that." You know, you don't know what you're going to get. So I think there is a part where they're like, hey, if I can make half my season tickets back right now in June, I'll do it. Obviously, playoffs and things like that are different. Don't do it then. Sell it to a Padres fan, you know.
And they haven't. And the
and they
Padres
haven't.
Have done
the
a good
Padres
job against the Dodgers
great job.
In the postseason.
But
sure.
I, you know, there is a – what does it say about your fan base that a team is like, I'd rather not deal with you guys tonight. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like being yelled at and – whatever. So I don't care. You know, yesterday I didn't care. I did see it. There was a very large Japanese contingent in our area there to watch Shohei. Look, man, at the end of the day, I'm a baseball fan. I was 20 feet from Shohei Ohtani, and I went, my God, he's an avatar. And my son, who loves baseball more than anybody, was like, geez, Dad, he is huge. And I go, yeah, man, like, take it in. You are seeing one of the best to ever do it. You know, we hope he goes 0-4. But, you know, it is there's a part of that. I got great joy. I was surrounded, Dodger fans behind me, little kids, and a couple in front of me that were stoked to see him, you know, for the first time. And they were like, Dad, it's Shohei. And I was like, all right, you sons of guns. Like, it was, you know, it was a sweet moment. But, I can understand. I can understand not wanting to go to those games sometimes. Yeah. They do get a little bit rowdy.
The Ohtani factor is probably a huge thing.
It's massive. Yeah, 100%.
Paulie, is there anything the Padres – as an organization should be doing differently, or is it simply, hey, if you want no I mean, should they
just beating them,
should they be happy, hey, if opposing teams fans want to fill our coffers and shins and our tickets. Why would we ever turn our nose at that? That's fantastic. That's winning at the game and the business of baseball.
They do feel that way. I promise you. At least a little bit, they do feel that way. Like, I don't really care who sits there as long as they're buying
stuff.
Do
we care who listens? If they hate us, if they love us, I don't care. I'm glad you're listening.
There is a little bit of truth to that. Honestly, I thought the biggest thing for me, because Wednesday's game felt differently when they showed the crowd versus Monday and Tuesday. And I texted you guys, and I said, look, I realize I'm texting one of you who is at this game with your son. I hope you're having a great time. 110 game sucks.
With the Dodgers, it does. You need the lights.
I need the lights. Why was that game not later in the day? It felt totally different from Monday and Tuesday night, and I think the time had something to do with that. I looked at the schedules. The Padres are off today. They're going to Arizona. That's a 40-minute flight. They could have absolutely left. They could leave Friday morning, but they absolutely could have left today. The Dodgers are off today, and they're going up to San Francisco.
That's a good idea.
I go, why the hell was that game a 110 start? Yeah. I know it's a getaway day, but both those teams have off days and very short flights. Make that at least a 5:40 start, if not a 6:40 start. I thought that had a huge part in that.
Aren't the Angels getting a lot of flack for doing that?
Yep.
I mean, the players hate that, don't they?
And it's still 45,481 or something showed up for a Wednesday middle-of-the-week game. Now, Chris, it's not football. The crowd screaming during, you know, an offensive team series. Right. You can actually have an impact at a football game. It's baseball. And when the crowd's 50-50, You don't have no less chance to win or more chance to win. Should it really even matter to baseball fans, other than your own ego as fans? Like, I want us to look like we're better fans than their fans. It doesn't matter to the team or the game that much, right?
Yeah, I think it's got to happen organically, at least during the regular season. If you want to take some steps in the playoffs to try to ensure you have more of your fans there, I don't even know that the Padres actually have to do that, because last year proved to me that we can keep Dodger fans out of the stadium. I don't remember very many, if any, at all in those two playoff games. But as far as visiting fans going to root for the other team, I grew up in L.A., and all I did was go to Dodger games and root for the other team. So I get it.
How many of those fans are from San Diego, though, by the way? I mean, there's a lot of Dodger fans that live here. It's not like they're all driving down in droves.
And you know, and part of me says that is because of the failings of previous Padres administrations and owners who didn't give fans in San Diego enough to reason to believe in their team. Had we all grown up with this version of the Padres, all of San Diego would be Padres fans. Everyone's kids would be Padres fans.
See the school.
Yeah, be like, Woods' kids.
See it. It's crazy.
It's obsessed now. But when I was growing up in San Diego, there were tons of Dodgers fans and Cubs fans and Giants fans down here, because the Padres of my youth didn't really give enough good seasons and reasons to become diehard fans of the team.
You had a couple of guys and a couple of guys every year that made you want to go out to the ballpark and watch. And now, man, as a father of and a coach in Little League, it's absolutely insane. You had 900 kids sign up for Little League in where our little tiny city where we live, 900 kids, and 800 of them are in Padres gear, and they all love Tatis and Arraez and Merrill. My God, what Jackson Merrill has done for this team. It's astounding.
That was not like it was when I was playing Little League at Scripps Ranch. I was like one of the only Padre fans like throughout the community. So
give it like 20
everybody
years.
In your neighborhood didn't want a Broderick Perkins jersey.
Now, there were Tony Gwynn fans.
Gwynn
fans. A lot of Tony Gwynn fans growing up, and they didn't seem to carry that over to the rest of the team. Oh, I love Tony Gwynn.
That was it.
I don't know who the rest of the players are.
Right.
But if you look, I mean, Woods is right, and that's even like at the high school age kids now, too. I mean, the high school kids that I will see on Jersey Day when I go to practice, they're all wearing Padres jerseys. When I was in high school on Jersey Day, there was not a single person wearing a Padres jersey, except for maybe one girl that needed a jersey, and her dad gave her the Corey Lubke giveaway jersey that they had laying around the house. That was about it.
Jersey Day.
When you go to Catholic school, Chris, you have to wear a uniform.
When I grew up, Jersey Day, there was no such thing as owning a jersey.
When you go to Catholic school and you have to wear a uniform, you got to jazz it up a little bit. So you have Jersey Day.
I think Paulie's right. The Padres have now done what they needed to do. Now it's just a matter of time.
And let this generation grow up.
And then have their kids and indoctrinate them into being Padres fans, and let all the San Diego Dodgers fans, they will eventually boomer on out and they will be gone.
I'm not saying this is the norm, but I have gone now to a couple of Padre-Dodger games in L.A. in which I've seen Dodger fans that are the parents and the kids dressing like Fernando, wearing Padres stuff. So there might be a little bit more Southern California Padres fans in the next 15, 20 years, like Paul said.
It is our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. All right, we've all done this enough. How many times have you interviewed a manager, Mike Schilt or A.J. Preller, and they've given you the time-tested cliche about how in a baseball season it takes the whole 26-man roster and the whole 40-man roster to be successful? It's not just about the lineup or the start. It takes everyone. It takes a village to be a successful baseball team. Well, right now, the Padres are playing with a 25-man roster, 25 guys, and Luis Camposano, who sits there, and unless Kike Hernandez is pitching, doesn't get an at-bat, doesn't get an inning in the field, is completely unused. When you talk about how important it is to use the whole roster, Chris, how can they defend not using Luis Camposano for just having him there, and what should they be doing with that last roster spot instead, or should they be playing him more?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. Somebody said, well, maybe they're trying to showcase him. How are they doing that?
That's definitely not the answer.
Like the way he looks in a uniform?
This is
the way he warms up pitchers between innings.
Yeah. Is there somewhere where somebody could point out that they want to save one of his trips back to the minor leagues because you only have so many options? Maybe somebody can try to get me to believe that.
Didn't they?
But other than that, sorry, Brad. Other than that, this is stupid, right? I mean, that's the only word I have to describe it. To have somebody taking up, there are so few bench spots as there is. And if you want to tell me, well, nobody's really hitting much at the minor leagues, or who would you bring up? I don't care. Bring up the fastest guy in the organization and have a second pinch runner. At least anything that might help the team some situation.
Literally, a Mason McCoy to play short or second in the later inning. Something. Because
like a super specific defined role.
Correct.
Fine.
Because what I fear, my biggest fear, is that we're getting into petty land again. And we've been in petty land here. We've had several, I don't know if they are spats or whatever, but there's been several players over the last few years that come here and rot. Now, I've said on the air many times, maybe the eighth time's a charm for Luis Camposano, that he'll figure it out. If he's not going to figure it out, he's got to be down, and somebody needs to be up that can help you win ball games, because wasting a spot doesn't make any sense. And when I say petty land, I mean I don't want to play him. Well, you're gonna have him here. Well, I'm not going to play him. Well, he's going to be on your roster. Yeah. I'm not going to play him, though. Okay, that's your decision. Bro, it's happened every single year. Yeah. Happened in the playoffs. It's happened with Matt Carpenter. The guy would go 6 weeks. Forget he's there. Another wasted roster spot in a season where we really needed help.
We may have missed, the signs there between A.J. Preller and Bob Melvin.
We did.
When you have someone on your roster that the manager is refusing to play for a month, that is refusing to put in for an entire postseason, that there's a disconnect there. I have heard not a single word of disconnect between A.J. Preller and Mike Schilt at all. So is there reason here, Braden, to be concerned when you see Luis Camposano on the roster and Mike Schilt never using him in a game?
But make no mistake, no one's clamoring for Luis Camposano to get everyday starts, right? But somebody that can help you win a ball game. That's what no one is.
But they
in here
use
going,
Brandon Lockridge. They use Tyler Wade.
No one's
they
in here Jose screaming Iglesias. for 20 ABs a week for Luis Camposano, I don't think. But why is he up if he's going to get one AB?
Could we not use another pitcher?
Right. I think you have to. I think there's
is there now a new thing? 13?
Yeah.
Could you not use?
Well, give me a pitch
unless
runner.
Unless you're the Dodgers and have Shohei Ohtani.
That's the big advantage.
Get an extra pitcher.
Could you not use a? Because there's no threat off this bench, and if you're not going to employ Camposano, and he's not really a threat either, so you got to have somebody that can help you win a game late.
Actions speak louder than words. I mean, we've like Ben just said, I haven't heard anything. Like, the actions are telling me that they don't, obviously, the person in charge down there doesn't want to play him. I mean, you're watching it. They're not playing the guy at all. We've actually heard that they don't want him catching because they like, and they're using the, well, Elias Diaz and Martin Maldonado are doing such a great job. We don't want to mess it up. But he has historically had questions about his catching ability. It was mostly for just to be a guy that hits. see this entire series, lefties come in late in a ball game, yes, and they let Tyler Wade hit against the left-hander, and they let Gavin Sheets hit against the left-hander, yeah, and Cronenworth, and all the lineup spots, and Campusano still doesn't come off the bench until they pitch Kike Hernandez. I'm surprised Campusano didn't start a fight as soon as that happened. How insulting is that?
Yeah.
Right? Woods, we're going to put...
We're going to let you hit underhand.
Woods, we're going to have you not play the entire month, but then they're going to put a joke of a pitcher in Kike Hernandez. Hey, Woods, grab a bat. What's your initial reaction?
I'm like, this is more embarrassing for me.
That is.
If I don't get a knock off this guy, I haven't had a hit all season. Now I got to go up there and you know, play slow pitch softball.
If you get the hit, it's embarrassing.
Right. If you get the hit all season against Kike Hernandez, it's even worse.
I'm not going to defend Luis Campusano, but how in any sort of way can you look at that situation this week and go, that is not the most insulting thing to that player of the week? It's his only at bat he has had in about like a month. He's 0 for 14 now. So I think that's the action of the why he doesn't play. There's obviously something going on. The other action, for everybody that says you got to pull somebody up, the Padres, as of right now, what they're telling us based on actions, would rather have Campusano rot on the bench than have anybody in AAA come up and do what he's doing. I mean, think about that for a second. If there was somebody, why waste the spot, yeah, right? So if they don't think there's anybody down there that can help, and they're just going to have Campusano sit there, you're playing with 25 guys.
What's his contract status? How many years of control?
Another like year or two more of ARB, yeah.
I think Woods hit something that needs to be explored a little bit more. We only have, you know, I know you have a lot of subjects, but I hadn't really thought of it in that regard. But it seems to me that there is some butting heads going on.
Sure.
Whether it's for the GM versus the manager, or just the manager being that bullish to a player that may have done something to embarrass the manager behind the scenes that we don't know 2 years ago. But what their personal thing to me is starting to come up to the bubble to the surface, because we're seeing it.
Right.
And it needs to stop, because the team's got to be more important than whatever is going on there.
I mean, has anybody asked in the last week? Hey,
somebody asked the other day, why isn't he playing? And Mike Schilt said, I've talked to him, and you know,
he's okay with it.
You're looking for a lane.
So let me turn it around though, and ask you all guys this: if this was the Dodgers and Andrew Friedman wanted Luis Campusano to get at bats, he would simply tell Dave Roberts, give him at bats.
He does
need him pinch hitting.
He
more
does it already. He does it with Michael Conforto,
of course,
who he paid $17 million.
Of course he
for
would. AJ Preller, though, doesn't do it that way. He puts a roster out on the field for Mike Schilt, but then I think he kind of puts his hands up and goes, Mike, it's your team to run the way you see fit.
And I think,
and Mike Schilt sees fit not to play Luis Campusano.
I think.
So is that a sign of respect that AJ has for Mike Schilt at the very least?
No, I mean, I think he's learned. I think that it hasn't always been that way, right?
Yes.
I think he's evolved. If you want to call that evolution, and I think I do. I think I do want to call that evolution. I got this manager to manage. I'll make suggestions. I'll listen to feedback. They talked about their holistic approach. There's nothing holistic about having a guy not play. Nothing. So that means that's the anti-holistic. That means two guys are in disagreement about it. They don't agree. That's not holistic.
I think we all remember the scene in Moneyball where Art Howe wanted to play Jeremy Giambi. Yeah. He goes, you're not playing Jeremy Giambi. Why? Because I just traded him.
He's not on the team anymore.
Yeah, well, trade him then, please.
Pena's not playing today.
Managing a way that I can explain in job interviews this winter.
Right.
I don't know. For me, this is personal. I won't speak for you guys. I don't want this to make it sound like it's a what the hell is Mike Schilt doing not playing Campusano? Because I just don't think he's that good.
I don't think so either.
Agreed.
I don't think he should be on the roster in
general. We agree with that.
And what we're saying is, why has he been there for a month?
Right. Well, the player is, think of it as a nameless, faceless player. There's a guy on your roster. His name we will not say. You're not playing him ever. He never gets used. He doesn't pinch run. He doesn't pinch hit. He doesn't come in for defensive purposes. Nameless, faceless player. No history at all. 0.0 batting average, which is actually true in this case.
Yes.
You know, but you're not playing him. So there's a spot that could be filled with somebody else that could help you in a ball game, and you're not playing him willfully. Like you know, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
I don't think Trenton Brooks is necessarily the answer,
no.
But Have we seen crazier stories in baseball where a guy comes up and
gets hot,
catches fire for a month and like, okay, we can't take him out of the lineup? You're never going to find out if you're not going to play the last guy and you're not playing Camposano right now.
Even if just wasting a roster spot for strictly a pinch runner in the ninth inning only or just for extra innings is still more useful than
they do in the playoffs all the time. Yeah, they always have that guy in the playoffs. Like, where have you been all season?
Berry's got rings, man.
Jorge Mateo, dude. Bring him back.
What's the next expected roster move? Like, is Jason Hayward coming back anytime soon? Not that anyone's clamoring for him
starting
either.
Starting a rehab assignment tomorrow.
So, I mean,
is that what they're waiting for, maybe?
Maybe waiting for that.
All right.
How much time did you have budgeted for that subject?
Not that much, but
we went over.
It was a good conversation. I'm not going to be mad about it.
Yeah.
Got us to our seventh inning stretch here, a little past the halfway mark of our San Diego Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. I don't think we discussed this last year. The San Diego County Fair is back, underway. I think we probably talked about fair foods, but today we're talking about those midway games. The ones where they're trying to encourage you, $10, $20, win a prize, step up and win a prize. And you get your choice on this one. It's not a draft. It's simply which of those games do you either love the most or despise the most when you're at the San Diego County Fair? And I will start with the one that I despise the most. You know the one where they have the frog, and you have to hit it and try to make it hop onto
a lily pad.
I have no idea how that possibly works or how anyone ever gets the frog to hop onto the lily pad. It looks like it's impossible. I mean, and people are standing there trying to get the frog to jump onto the lily pad, and there's just no way that you can have a skill that you can make that happen.
I like the... I like the.
There's got to be some guy in Iowa who just is really
just
good on the frog jump.
Well, when I was in high school, dude, there was a lot of my friends would go work for the fair during the summertime. Like the fair would always hire all my friends, and a couple of them did the bottle. You know, like the rod with the ring on the end of it, and you got to stack the bottle, and it looks impossible. And they said, like, the ones that ran that game, they taught him how to do it. And now they know how to do it every time. That's why, like, the little guy, the guy that runs it can do it every time. There's, like, a technique to it. But I like the game because somebody's going to win. But the one with, like, the horse race where you roll the ball and if it's, like, fast or whatever, someone's guaranteed to win. So, like, to me, that's worth
more
the game.
More competition.
Yeah, it's more competition.
Skee-ball competition. Yeah. That's not a bad one. Woods?
I like the... throwing balls at the Cupid doll.
Well, yeah, knock them over. Yeah. Good. Which is a little baseball-like, but they put so much fuzz on
there's
the end.
There's a lot of
you
fuzz.
Think you hit it.
I think you hit it, but you got to
hit
it.
And it goes right through it.
Square, dude.
Hit it in the lower squat area.
You don't want to knock over the bottles. Those are glued together.
Yeah, and I like that game. I never got that fishing game, you know, where you had to... There's like
to try to win a goldfish
or something.
I don't know.
In the basketball, I'm terrible at.
It's impossible. It's tiny. It looks normal, but it's not.
I feel domed out. It's the second I grab a ball, my wife's there watching. I'm like, oh, God, this is going to miss. That's a brick every time.
Your wife is pretty nice. My wife would, like, yank the wallet out of my hand. You're not spending any money on this.
I'm going to try it tonight. I'm going to try it and see if I can make one.
Ball, you ever chase the dragon on one of those midway games?
No, I probably gravitate more towards the basketball ones, even though I know it's rigged.
It's so hard,
but I feel like I have still my best chance.
Right.
The one I hate the most is probably like the ring toss on the empty bottles.
That's rough.
It's terrible. Dude. But I usually avoid most of those games.
Funny, I have a funny story. It's not my story. It's my dad's. When he was a kid or like a teenager, they used to have the game. I haven't seen it anymore, but there was a game where like there would be like a rope ladder from like where you're at to like up,
you have to go
up the thing and hit the button.
Nope.
And you win, and everybody always falls off.
Over.
So his neighbors, I don't remember their names because I've heard the story before. His neighbors, after the first time at the fair they did that, built one at their house
to train,
and they practiced all year long. And then they went to the fair and they cleaned out.
Cleaned it.
They cleaned them out. They got banned from doing the game at the fair. They went through and got every single stuffed animal from that game. And since I've heard that story, even though it's a long time ago, it's very rare where I see that game anymore. They rigged it.
Chris, you like games of skill?
I would just like to know why your dad's friends couldn't use all of their time and talent on something a little more important.
More productive than stuffed animals?
More productive
stuffed
than
animals? They're high school kids, man. What are you?
I'm just going to answer Paul's hatred of the game where you throw the ring on the bottle, because I did that one time as a kid, and I did have a big stuffed dog in my room, and his name was Ringer.
Ringer.
I like it.
Clever.
Wow.
There is something satisfying about the water pistol into the clown's mouth, and then the balloon starts blowing up until it pops. Yeah. That one's kind of satisfying.
I got to play at least one of those games every time I go to the fair. That's like on my list. Eat something really bad for you. Play one of those stupid games. Not touch the rides.
We'll get back to the Padres here. And while we spend a lot of time talking about the struggles, hitting, left field, let's talk about a positive. Pitching has been a positive for the San Diego Padres, and I was chatting with some of my television competitors in the press box going, what would you ask on our round table? And this is Jake Gariani from Channel 8.
Love Jake.
Who wanted to know what you guys thought, if you were confident enough that Ryan Burgert will continue to be at least a serviceable back-end member of the Padres starting rotation going forward, based on what you've seen so far. Woods, you're nodding.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Good fastball. We had the numbers the other day in regards to his fastball shape. The IVB on his fastball, comparable to Robert Suarez and Dylan Cease. And the slider, he spins it really well. I think the more chances he gets, the more reps he takes, the more time in the lab with Ruben Niebla, the better for Ryan Burgert. But I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. I would rather see him up and going every fifth day than some of our other options.
Do you remember the inch on the IVB?
It was comparable
18,
to Cease and Suarez were the comps, which is really good. So, I think the more time spent, more time being a big leaguer, the more time picking the brain of the guys around him, he's got something.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Watch
curious.
Him get lit up next time, just by the way, since I said
IVB doesn't work in Colorado.
Yeah, true.
Pauly, what are you seeing from Ryan Burgert? You getting some confidence?
Yeah,
in him?
I agree with what Woods said. I like the stuff. I think of all of the, lesser name guys on the staff right now, the Randy Vasquez, Stephen Kolek, Ryan Burgert, I guess you could throw a Matt Waldron kind of type in there. Basically anybody other than Pivetta, King, Cease, Musgrove, and Darvish, like, I think he's got a legitimate shot to be in this rotation for many years. Like, I really like what I'm seeing. It's early. The book is still out on him. Teams will adjust, but he'll get a chance to adjust as well.
That's what worries me, is that we've yet to see the other teams go through that adjustment phase, and there could be a naturally downstretch still coming for Ryan Burgert. Chris, what are your thoughts? And then I think oppositely with Stephen Kolek, I feel like we've kind of gone through that. He's been in the big leagues, even in the back end of the rotation last year. Now we're seeing it in the starting rotation. I actually am starting to gain more confidence in Stephen Kolek going forward, maybe even as someone that I can see being in the rotation next year as well for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, it's one at a time, though, really. I mean, we all saw Matt Waldron not only in the rotation this year, but I'm pretty sure last July he got some team MVP votes from the panel here.
Yeah,
he ended up fading once they figured him his thing out and the knuckleball stopped knuckling. I mean, the point being, there's about 10,000 cautionary tales of starting pitchers who give you two or three good starts.
Yeah.
And you're talking about waiting for Ryan Burgert, you know, to maybe go through a down. Well, how long has his upturn been? Two starts. Make no mistake, the second that Michael King is ready to go, Ryan Burgert's, you know, going to go back. But I appreciate what he contributed.
But, you know, the Padres need to find not only pitchers that get them through this season, but rotation members for the next couple of years. With Dylan Cease and Michael King as free agent, Yu Darvish clearly getting, you know, nearer the end than the beginning, and Joe Musgrove, you don't know what you get coming off of Tommy John surgery. Are any of these guys in your minds, Paul, I'll start with you, rotation, you know, mainstays maybe for a couple of years?
Oh, I want to say I hope not, because that means we're just like we're letting all these guys go and we're not bringing anybody else in. I mean, really, that means like Pivetta's your one next year, the only guy that's under contract. I think there's a spot for a Randy Vasquez. It's not an easy watch, but he gets the job done, at least so far this year. I mean, heading into yesterday's ballgame, you say they won the six out of the last seven games that he started. Like, it ain't aesthetically pleasing, but he gets the job done. I do think probably one of a Kolek or a Bergert should probably be in the back end of the rotation next year, depending on what other moves AJ makes, of course. I don't know which one that is going to be yet.
How about trading one of these guys right now?
Before they...
Like a Bergert
right
their
now,
value?
Yeah, getting something that we really need.
Left.
I mean, what do we have? What? How many assets?
You mean trade one of the young guys, or trade one of the guys that
trade
on expiring contract
right now? Give me somebody. Help him get me a left fielder.
What about this? Do you trade Dylan Cease right now, Chris Ello?
No.
I was testing to see. I mean, yeah, you can't look. You got to look. We are in the fortunate position of being able to look at this team game to game. Like, hey, let's just go out and beat the Diamondbacks. There needs to be long-term planning. It's not for us to do. It's for the front office to do, and they are absolutely doing it. You can rest assured. They're asking the same question, Benny. Is he a part of the rotation's future? And, you know, you think about the great pitchers that are developing right now in the game. You know, there's only one Paul Skeens, right? There's guys that are coming up. The Brewers just called up their top pitching arm. He's supposed to be really nasty. None of these guys, you don't watch them and go, wow, oh, my God, this is, you know, this guy is the next great one. But, man, four or five in the rotation, Ryan Bergert, yeah, he's got the stuff to stay.
There was just no hype for these guys.
It was pretty quiet.
Kolek and Bergert.
Pretty quiet. And it's good finds. Like, yeah. It's good scouting. It's good finds.
I'm just talking purely on the hype. Like, when you had Ryan Weathers come up, and he pitched brilliantly in that playoff game against the Dodgers, they had no business being in the first place. And then Mackenzie Gore. Like, there was so much hype that, yeah, at the first sign of good pitching, you're going, look at this. We hit on this guy. This is great. You just never heard that with any of these guys.
AJ's always going to find the hype guys. He has no problem finding the hype guys. There'll be tons of hype for Cash Mayfield and Boston Bateman in the next couple of years, and either they'll come up with the Padres or he'll trade them for something else. But you need some steady guys as well. And I wanted to go the other direction on Randy Vasquez. He's got 2 years of control left, two arb years. Braden, would you consider a team-friendly contract extension for Randy Vasquez? Say like 4 years, $24 million, $6 million a year, and you go, Randy, you're a four going forward, and just lock something in for the future. I know he's not probably going to win a Cy Young Award or anything, but you...
How old is he again?
Randy Vasquez is 27.
26 or 27, yeah. Right?
You 4 year deal for $24 million?
Six a year.
Done.
I would do that.
Would you do something like that? Team friendly?
In a heartbeat.
Would Randy Vasquez consider something like that?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
He might.
All the way. It's a long way from free agency.
And it's guaranteed money.
This would be a good time, I think, to approach it, at least, if you're AJ Preller, to talk about that. You need some long-term pitching options that aren't 39 years old.
You can't. Like, you need the Bergerts, and you need the Koliks, and you need the Vasquezes, because those are the guys that counteract your lust for a big payroll guy, right?
Yeah, we're dead without those guys.
You need those guys, and you need to be able to find outs. And when you're, you know, the cliche you brought up, it takes 40. This is the 40 you're talking about. These are the guys that are going to go get you outs. And, you know, Bergert did a great job in those two starts, and he might do 3-4, and then he might get rocked, and then replace him with somebody else, and you get a couple good starts out of him. Those are the pieces that good teams have to make it through the entire season. Not relying on those four or five guys, but using them strategically throughout the year. You need those guys in your organization. Those are the type of guys that you can't really trade away. I like that idea, Ben. I like potentially, you know, solidifying a pitcher that's going to be part of your organization
for that price.
Yeah, I would just hope that they make a couple of other moves before that one, because if that's the first move that's made this year and you're going, fantastic, 4 years of Randy Vasquez, who's playing left tomorrow?
And I think it's more pressing than people realize. 2028 seems like a long way away, but it'll be on you pretty fast. Joe Musgrove is a free agent after 2027. Nick Pivetta can opt out after 2026. You know, Yu Darvish is signed, but will he make it that far? Will he retire? Will he still be in your organization? We know Dylan Cease and Michael King are going to become free agents. You have no future of pitching guaranteed beyond two seasons at all.
Your question then should be right now, do you go absolutely 100% blank to the wall to win a World Series this year?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
I think you do that every year.
With Manny and Xander and those guys under contract.
But like, it's dire. The way you just put it, with all those guys, you know, coming, it's dire.
You sign the Vasquez, the Koliks, the Berg, whoever you think are going to be the four or five of the future. If you could get one of them to be a three, it'd be great. But if you get those solidified on small deals long term and get them early,
yep.
then you splurge on a one and two,
and get creative.
Paul King, saying, King right? you could splurge on
yeah,
King.
And then you get your ace, and then you have your rotation, and it's locked. You don't have to worry about depth too much.
I think you also look heavily in the international and draft market the next couple of years.
Correct.
College pitchers, international pitchers that you think could impact in 3 or 4 years on your roster.
And Preller's hit on a couple of those guys.
I want to use just a little wrench into the Vasquez thing, and you shouldn't start a new subject this late in the show.
I'll continue on my show.
You can try it if you think it's worthwhile. Does Mike Schilt even have any confidence in Randy Vasquez? He guaranteed before that game in his mind that there was no way this guy was pitching to the third time through the order.
Isn't that smart, though?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Going to be something going forward?
Right. Good question.
Are they just going to say now, we've decided that Randy Vasquez is a two-time through the order pitcher?
I don't think so.
His statistics back that thinking up.
What if it's not the Dodgers he's going against and I'm just asking you.
If they were playing Arizona, if it was against Arizona, I think he'll pitch next week. Who do they play at the beginning of next week? Dodgers. Well, you know, so you've already telling him before that game, you're getting two times through.
Yeah.
I don't hate that either. 70% of starting pitchers in baseball.
Well,
two
no,
times
because
the order guys.
Not really, because two times through the order gets you four innings. That's not enough.
We got a college pitcher talking right now.
No, I don't. It's not.
Protecting the pitchers.
Let me finish my point on this one. If you've determined that he's a two-time through the order guy, then no, I'm not signing him to anything. I don't want two-time through the rotational arms.
I don't think they determined he's a two-time through the order guy. I think the situation yesterday
Let's see.
Shohei is the best player in baseball, and he's a left-hander.
Skip the next one against the Dodgers. It's probably going to be the same.
If you were never going to let Vasquez face Shohei a third time, yesterday was the day. It was the best he's ever looked in my mind. And you had already taken him out of the game before the fifth inning started, by the way. Morejon was already throwing. To flip it.
If he goes against Ohtani there with a rested and ready bullpen, Morejon, day off today, we're seething. Yes. They're seething in
I'm
here.
I'm not disagreeing with what they did yesterday. I'm talking about Vasquez in a vacuum.
Moving forward.
Have they decided that he's only good two times through the rotation, or does that only count against the Dodgers?
He has, because the third time through, it's like a 371. He's decided that, right?
Okay,
like,
well, then I'm not paying $6 million
anymore. I think if it's a playoff game, I'm not sure Pivetta gets a third
chance
at Ohtani. If the bullpen's rested and ready,
they go.
Mike Schilt and any other manager is making the same decision. Especially Dave Roberts.
How old's Randy Vasquez again? I mean, he's 26, 27 years old. It's his like, second year in the big leagues. I mean, we're also saying, like, what, is he never going to improve? I mean, he's already drastically improved, I think, from 1 year. Maybe in the next couple of years, he's a guy that's pitching three times through the
year. How many pitchers have gotten worse working with Ruben Niebla?
Guys, we're talking about a starting pitcher that's going to give you that many starts for $6 million a year. It's a no-brainer.
He's giving you a sub-4 ERA right now.
It's a no-brainer. I think he and his agents would scoff at that. I agree
with what Chris is saying. If he's only a two-time through the rotation guy, or two-time through the order guy, then you can't.
What does Patrick Corbin make a year? You know what I mean? He's going to laugh at $6 million.
All I want is the next time the Padres play the Marlins or whoever, I want to see Vasquez in the sixth inning.
Yeah, let him eat.
He's pitching as well as he did yesterday.
Agreed.
All right, I think that's it for our time today. Good last topic there, Chris.
Great job. You really got the panel riled up.
Brayden, you can carry that over.
That's going to be great. Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for joining us on our San Diego Roundtable Pizza Roundtable. It really is pizza royalty. Just a programming note, we will be off next week. All shows will be off for Juneteenth. Dodgers series, though, it's probably too emotional for all of us to get together anyway next Thursday, but we'll rejoin you for another roundtable in 2 weeks. For Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Brayden Soprenant, Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Brayden's show's coming up next live here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.